Okay, this is a call out to my listeners. I do not have a lot of sponsors for this podcast on purpose because I don't want to waste your time with products I am not crazy about. Well, I do have two that I am crazy about. The first one is LLC TLC. This is where you can save money on your car registration. Every year, you can set up a Montana LLC and pay no sales tax on your vehicle purchases, which is really amazing. Now, you can also permanently register your classic cars in Montana to avoid any annual renewal fees. And as your registered agent, LLC TLC will handle everything for you, so you never have to step foot in Montana to take advantage of this incredible offer. Now, as a listener of this podcast, they are offering 30% off your entire package. Now, to get this, simply go to LLCTLC.com/classic or mention this podcast when you call them directly. My other big sponsor of this podcast is Euro Classics out of Dayton, Ohio. Now, that's Euro Classic with an X.com. If you want to reach them in person, you can reach them at 937-299-1311. Now, this is where I get all of the work done on my Porsche. I just had my GTO in there. My Mustang's been in there. It is the place to go if you want awesome service at an extremely competitive price. So when you go there, just ask for Dale and tell him that I sent you. Okay, welcome to the Collector Car Podcast. Hey, it's Craig Stanley, and today is 30 things you did not know about Lamborghini. Now, I'm sure you know some of this, but I guarantee you will not know all of this. And my first example is a personal Lamborghini story. And some of you know this if you've listened to my podcast, but the first Lamborghini, the first supercar I ever saw in person was a 1983 Lamborghini Countach, white with red interior, sitting out front of Racket Power off of State Road 13 in Jacksonville, Florida, back in 1983. And I fell in love. It looked like a spaceship sitting there in the parking lot. So how about that? Probably most of you did not know that fact, but a few of you did. So let's move on. The next 10 facts are from facts.net. And now many of these facts I did find across numerous websites. So the ones I'm quoting are just the ones that I pulled the exact bullet points from. Lamborghini was founded in 1963 by Federico Lamborghini, a wealthy Italian industrialist. The company was originally established to produce high-performance sports cars to rival the dominant Ferrari brand. Now, if you watched the most recent Ferrari movie, you will know that Lamborghini was upset that the clutches kept failing in his 250 GT, and that was one of the reasons why he wanted to create his own rival car. We will revisit the origination of Lamborghini here in a moment. Technically, that was number two fact. So number three, the Lamborghini Countach, introduced in 1974, became an instant icon of automotive design with its bold and aggressive styling. Its wedge-shaped body and scissor doors captured the imagination of car enthusiasts around the world, including a 13-year-old Greg Stanley. Number four, the famous Lamborghini logo features a charging bull symbolizing strength, power, and aggression. It is a tribute to the founder's zodiac sign, Taurus, and reflects the company's commitment to producing formidable automobiles. Now, there is a Lamborghini museum located in Italy, which showcases the company's rich history and some of its most iconic models. Visitors can explore the evolution of Lamborghini's legendary cars and immerse themselves in the brand's passion for performance. Number five, the Lamborghini Urus, introduced in 2017, marked the brand's entry into the luxury SUV segment. With its powerful twin-turbocharged V8 engine, the Urus delivers SUV practicality without compromising on Lamborghini's signature performance. I actually love those. I think some of them can look hideous depending on the color combo and such, but overall, I think those are really cool sport use. Number seven, Lamborghini is renowned for its extensive use of carbon fiber in its cars. The lightweight and strong material not only enhances performance, but also contributes to the overall striking aesthetics of Lamborghini's design language. Number eight, released in 2016 to celebrate the 100th anniversary of Lamborghini's birth, the Centenario is a limited edition hypercar that pushes the boundaries of automotive engineering. With a top speed of over 217 miles per hour, it represents the pinnacle of Lamborghini's performance capabilities. Number nine, Lamborghini Squadra Corsa is the motorsport division of Lamborghini dedicated to developing and racing high-performance cars. It competes in prestigious events such as the Super Trofeo and GT World Challenge, showcasing the brand's motorsport prowess. Now, we will revisit that one in a moment because that was not something that Lamborghini had any desire to do while he ran the company. Number 10, Lamborghini offers an exclusive customization program called Ad Personam, allowing customers to personalize their cars to reflect their unique tastes and preferences. From choosing custom colors to selecting premium materials, this program offers a bespoke experience, and they will charge you a ton of money for that experience. Number 11, the Lamborghini Huracan Performante, introduced in 2017, is a track-focused variant that takes performance to new heights. Engineered to achieve exceptional lap times, it features advanced aerodynamics, lightweight construction, and enhanced driving dynamics. All right, the next eight or so are from DorciaFinance.com. Number 12, before delving into the world of sports cars, Lamborghini initially started his business by manufacturing tractors. Lamborghini Trattori, his tractor company, was a huge success and provided the financial foundation for his venture into the luxury automobile industry. He decided to create high-performance cars to rival the likes of Ferrari, his biggest inspiration. Number 13, Lamborghini had a passion for Spanish bullfighting. This is why many Lamborghini models bear names associated with bullfighting or bull-related themes. Number 14, the Lamborghini Miura, introduced in 1966, was a game-changer in the automotive world. It was the first production car to have a mid-engine layout where the engine was positioned behind the driver but ahead of the rear axle. This layout became a standard for high-performance sports cars. Lamborghini challenged his engineers to create a powerful engine for his sports cars. Inspired by aircraft engines, they designed the legendary V12 engine. The V12 engine became a signature feature of Lamborghini vehicles and is still used in some modern models. Hopefully that will still last for a while. Number 16, the ownership of Lamborghini has changed hands over the years, but has been a part of the Volkswagen Group since 1998. Number 17, let's go into the ownership story a little bit more. Lamborghini's acquisition by the Volkswagen Group came after a series of ownership changes. In 1973, the company faced financial difficulties and ownership shifted from the Lamborghini family to a group of Swiss investors. Later, it was acquired by Chrysler Corporation in 1987. In 1998, Lamborghini was sold again to the Volkswagen Group. This acquisition was part of Volkswagen's strategy to expand its luxury and high-performance automotive portfolio. Number 18, the 350 GTV was unveiled at the Turin Auto Show without an engine, as it was unfinished. The display car had bricks hidden under the hood. That is a great fact. Number 19, an insect inspired the Aventador design. According to chief Lamborghini designer, his inspiration for the Aventador came those shiny green jagged-legged beetles that smell bad when you step on them. Not quite sure what genius that is of the bug species. All right, the next handful of fun facts comes from newcarsonline.com. Number 20, Lamborghini never participated in any major motorsports competition. According to the will of Federico Lamborghini, his company stayed away from racing because the famous Italian engineer always believed motorsports to be a big waste of time and resources. Now, that has changed over the past few decades as a high-performance automobile company needs to participate in motorsports in some way to really connect to their fan base. Number 21, Lamborghini Countach was produced by the Italian company for 16 years from 1974 to 1990. Notably, this sports car is one of the few Lamborghini models with a name that has nothing to do with bulls and bullfighting. The word Countach comes from the Piedmontese language spoken in the region of Piedmont, northwest Italy. It is an expression of excitement or astonishment and can be translated as heavens. According to the legend, Nuccio Bertone himself made such an exclamation when he saw the first sketches of the future supercar. All right, so if you ever are shocked by something in a positive way, you can now say, Countach! The story of Lamborghini was not always a story of success. In 1987, the American automobile giant Chrysler practically saved it from oblivion by acquiring it. The same year, the Italian vehicle manufacturer presented a peculiar concept car under the name of Portofino. It was a sedan with four doors of the guillotine style, powered by a 3.5-liter engine installed at the rear. Although it remained only a prototype, its image and design were subsequently embodied in many Chrysler cars. I'll have to look that up. I wonder what Chrysler cars look like, the failed Lamborghini Portofino. Number 23, Lamborghini cars are used by the police in the United Arab Emirates and Italy. It makes sense if you think about it. Nothing can detract criminals and attract tourists like the world's fastest police car. Number 24, Lamborghini has a very long and fruitful relationship with Italian wheel manufacturer Pirelli. From day one, Pirelli tires were used on all Lamborghini vehicles. The Italian automaker even created the special version of Lamborghini Aventador dedicated to Pirelli. Number 25, Lamborghini is partially responsible for the emergence of the well-known automobile mark Pagani. The founder of Pagani, Horatio Pagani, had worked as an engineer at Lamborghini until he quit due to his inability to employ his ideas. In 1988, the famous Argentinian constructor, eager to put into use his designer talent and make his product, created a new company, Pagani. Now, I believe that he was the designer on the anniversary Countach, which is one that was featured in the Wolf of Wall Street movie. Okay, the next few facts are from MoneyInc.com. Number 26, as the company had experience in producing tractors, it seemed a natural progression to manufacture a car with off-road capabilities. The first SUV they built was a Lamborghini LM002. It combined off-road capabilities with speed and luxury. I'm in love with these. I think they're absolutely stunning. They made just over 300 models. An LM002 means Lamborghini Military, and 2 is because it was the second model. If my memory serves correct, the prototype was called the Cheetah, and the first military prototype was LM001. Number 27, it may seem strange, but Lamborghini engines are the perfect fit for speedboats. The V12 engine is ideal for speedboats and was fitted in the luxury boat Riva Aquarama. The famous owner of this boat was none other than Lamborghini himself. He owned the boat for 20 years before selling it to a close friend. While he was the owner, it broke several records. Lamborghini also said it was an important aspect of his lifestyle. Thanks to its engine, it became one of the leaders in the market. As the concept of using these engines in boats was so successful, Lamborghini continues to manufacture V12 engines for offshore powerboat racing. Number 28, one accolade that Lamborghini has to its name is building the first Viper engine. They developed the Dodge Viper during the 1980s. Dodge didn't want to simply drop a regular truck motor into their cars. Instead, they asked Lamborghini to design and cast an aluminum prototype of a Viper engine. Although it wasn't the one they eventually used in production, the prototype still exists. It is now locked away somewhere in Detroit. Ironically, they ended up dropping in a regular truck motor. That was souped up a little bit. All right, the next few are from CarBuzz, and then we'll have one from me to close it out. All right, number 29, Lamborghini built a motorcycle. I did not know this. The 1980s were an excellent time for Lamborghini financially, and the head of the company at the time decided the brand should branch out. Lamborghini still builds incredible boat engines, but the project to develop and sell a motorcycle didn't go well. The Design 90 motorcycle was outsourced to Boxer Bikes and used a Kawasaki engine. 50 orders for the bikes were placed, but only 6 were built, including concepts. The project was iced when GM took over Lamborghini and was ultimately forgotten. All right, the last fact from me, number 30, the Diablo engine powered the Vector M12, and it cost approximately $37,000 per engine. These are some pictures I took when I visited the Vector plant back in the early 90s and got a picture of the Diablo engine being installed, and the folks on site there told me that it cost $37,000 per engine to get them. Now, I believe they only made about 14 M12s, but they are all powered by the Diablo engine. Okay, I am doing my Moto Miami recap from my hotel room. Ironically, I'm not in Miami anymore. I'm actually up in the Knoxville area for something else. I flew directly from Miami early yesterday morning up to Knoxville. But as an overview, the Moto Miami weekend was absolutely incredible. It was really, really cool to see RM Sotheby's and the Moto team pull this off. It wasn't without hiccups. You know, there was a couple little things, but nothing major. Now, if you're watching on YouTube, you probably noticed I changed. I got quite a suntan versus the segment right before this. The grouping of cars was incredible, the way they had them on the show field, the way they lined them up. They kind of put like all the Lamborghinis kind of like around the sand trap. So they were in a circle
And all of the Lamborghinis that were there were incredible. But that was for every class of car. It was just unbelievable. And then if it wasn't good enough, we had the CLK Mercedes there with Fangio's Mercedes F1. I think the CLK was the most photographed car for the entire weekend. That was really cool to see. And RM Sotheby's had all their auction cars set out between a green, a fairway, and a tent. And so I was trying to figure out where they're going to put 100 supercars on Sunday. And what happened was is all the auction cars were shipped back into the parking garage of the Biltmore. And then that space was taken over by 100 supercars on Sunday. And it was quite a parade. They had them come through, go up on stage for a photograph, and then curve around for 100 cars. So that was very, very cool. I think probably my favorite part was the Shelby starting grid. So they made one of the fairways look like the starting grid for a 1960 Shelby race. That was really, really cool. The Biltmore itself was just beautiful. The lighting was incredible. It was somewhat of a maze. It took me a while to figure my way around. There's actually the lobbies on the second floor, and there's these cool old antique bird cages, huge bird cages with birds in them, which is really cool. Wonderful lobby. And in the lobby, Sotheby's actually set up their marketplace. So on one half of the lobby, there were purses and jewelry. And on the other half of the lobby, there were really nice watches. And one watch really caught my eye. It was very interesting. It was a Yanko Stinger watch. Now this is, they only made like 12 of them. It was a Hauer watch, Hoyer, Hauer, however you want to say it. But it was made for Yanko Stinger drivers. And they only made 12 of these watches. And only two are known to exist. And I believe they said the estimate was around $50,000, which is a lot of money. So if you don't recall Yanko Stingers, those are the Corvairs that Yanko souped up, and some of them were raced. Really, really cool cars. Now let's get on to the auctions here. So for the weekend, it looked like overall it was a good weekend. The numbers I have here are preliminary, just based on Hammer Price app. On Sunday. Since then, I see that Broad Arrow has released their findings where it went up quite a bit. And then I know RM Sotheby's is working on closing a few more sales, so their results will go up quite a bit as well. Probably Bonhams had the worst outing. They actually only had a 65% sell-through rate. I wasn't there, obviously, so I don't know what was driving that. Right now, I show that Broad Arrow had almost an 86% sell-through rate, but I just got an email stating that that was actually up to 96%, so they must have sold quite a few cars post-block. Gooding had a really good weekend. They were around 93% at the time that I pulled the numbers, and Sotheby's was around 93% as well, and I know that they are still working on getting some cars sold. Now, what was cool at the RM Sotheby's auction, now, you know, I bid spot, so I'm in the audience. I'm talking to people. I'm watching what happens. Is there was some real auction magic that occurred. Now, what do I mean by this? Well, this is why people bring cars to auction at times, because they want it to go crazy. They want it to go nuts. They want it to be an unexpected and incredible result. Let me start with one here first. So I won't tell you what it is, but this is a lot, an offering that the estimate was $65,000 to $75,000. Now, I was talking to the consigner, and he was really, really nervous because it was no reserve. He didn't want to walk out of there with $45,000. I'm sure he had more in it. And when the bidding got up, I'm in the audience bid spotting. He's filming this entire event, and he's about 6 feet in front of me. So I'm looking right at him. He's filming the auction. He's filming the auction, so I'm front and center while he's filming this. But when it got to $85,000 in bidding, now 65 was low estimate, 75 was high estimate. When it got to $85,000, he started tearing up. You could see it in his eyes. His face was turning red. He was tearing up. That it sold for, I believe, over $200,000. Now, what car was this? Well, actually, it wasn't a car, believe it or not. This was a boat that was cut in half and turned into a boat bar. So he works on these up in Michigan, and he brought this thing down to Miami, handcrafted, incredible, really, really cool, and it sold for triple low estimate. So he was crying at the end of that. Some other really interesting auction magic, there was a SL73 AMG. Now this speaks to the next generation of collector car. That estimate was $250,000 to $450,000, and it sold for $550,000. And one way you can tell at auctions if there's a lot of interest, the car specialists have a meeting that morning to gauge interest, like number of phone bidders, number of absentee bids, number of inquiries prior. So we can kind of get a sense of the cars that will perform well or not. For Friday, the car that had the most interest at our pre-meeting was a 1970 Boss 302. Now, that was a really cool car. It was grapper green. It had the slats. It had the spoiler. It had the shaker hood scoop. It actually had power steering, which is pretty rare on a Boss 302. Nicely redone. And the estimate, I believe it was $60,000 to $80,000, or $65,000 to $85,000. And that hammer sold at the top estimate. So yes, it did hit the top estimate, but it didn't go crazy. So you never know how the interest prior to the auction will actually affect the auction result. Another one that had a lot of interest was the 1929 airplane, believe it or not, from out of Africa. Now this one, the estimate was $140,000 to $220,000. And now just a little caveat here, the proceeds were going to a nonprofit, and you were going to have dinner with Robert Redford, which is pretty cool. So I got the story afterwards. One of the car specialists, Evan Schoen, who's been on this podcast before, he said he had a German guy come running up to him, and he was very excited in his thick German accent, asking about the airplane, wanted to see the airplane, and he stated that he flew from Germany to get that airplane. And so he was the one that ended up being the winning bidder. And he had no idea that that also included a dinner with Robert Redford. He was like, what? Oh, that's cool. Anyway, so that hammered for $450,000. The last one I'll mention here, a 2007 Ferrari 612 Sessanta. Yeah, I think I got that right, Sessanta. So this is a car, they only built 60 of them, and they were to commemorate the 60th anniversary of Ferrari. Not that attractive of a car, I mean, a nice car, nothing crazy. In most people's minds, the car that celebrated 60 years was the Enzo, because you had the F40 supercar, you had the F50 for the 50th anniversary, and then the Enzo was the next hypercar that came out. But no, there was actually 60 of these built. Now, this one only had 1,888 miles, and the estimate was $125,000 to $175,000. And it hammered for over $400,000. That was a lot of fun. And that was the second to last lot offered, believe it or not. So another thing that was really cool is once I got there, so I did the podcast last week talking about these cars with Gord. I tried to pick the ones I thought I would like the most. But once I got there, I really saw others that it was like the next level of like. So one example I'll give is the Mercedes Mallet. So this is an interesting vehicle. It's an AMG Mercedes wagon, black and black. It's got the AMG wheels. It's got a big V8. I just thought that was the coolest thing when I saw it in person. Another one I really love was a Lamborghini 350 GT. That one was very, very cool because it was the 14th Lamborghini ever built, and it was the first two-seater Lamborghini. So wrap your brain around that. When we think of Lamborghinis, most of us think of two-seater supercars, and this was actually the very first one ever built. So that was very cool to see that car in person. One of the cars that kind of disappointed me when I saw it in person, and in my defense, I didn't look at all the pictures online, was the 1988 Lamborghini Countach. Now that one only had like 1,100 miles, and unrestored, beautiful, beautiful car. Paint, you know, that was really cool because it was like a timepiece. Just looking at it, see the build quality when it was first built, see the glue coming through some of the areas of the interior was really cool to see. But then I popped the engine bay, and I did not look at the engine bay picture prior to coming down there. And whoever bought it in period had re-chromed just a bunch of parts. Even the hood hinges were re-chromed, chromed. They weren't even chromed before. So that's taking an original finish and chroming it, which, I'm like, oh, that's horrible. So that was one that did not hammer across the block, but it was sold on Sunday. All right, there were some deals, definitely some deals out there. One of the ones that really stuck in my mind was a 1961 Mercedes-Benz 190 SL. Now, the estimate was $200,000 to $240,000. It hammered to $160,000. this one was a funny one because as people are seeing it, you know, this is probably when it's around $100,000, they're thinking it's about to sell. I had two people run up to me asking if they could get registered to bid quickly because they wanted to put a bid in, and we weren't able to do it that quickly. So they did not have a chance to jump in on it, but it did hammer 60 grand more than that moment in time. The 1950s motorcycles were kind of soft. Those kicked off the day. They were no reserve, so they brought less than expected. And honestly, we don't sell a lot of motorcycles, so that's probably, the consignor was probably expecting that as well. And then there was a 1937 Cord 812 supercharged cabriolet. The estimate was 225 to 300. That one hammered sold for 135. So all in, you know, that would be around 140 or so. So there were some deals there. These big auctions are just a ton of fun just to sit and watch what happens. But anyways, those are some of the results, some of the fun stuff. It was just a wonderful weekend. I got too much sun. I had too much to drink. I walked around too much. But I'm looking forward to doing all of that again next year. Now, will it be in Miami next year? Honestly, I don't know. I had heard rumors that it might pop to Nashville next year. But after the success of this weekend and the monumental effort it took to put this thing together, I'm pretty sure it's going to be in Miami again, and it will be even bigger and better. So hopefully I will see you then. If not, I will talk to all of you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Collector Car Podcast. Don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes and be sure to follow us on Instagram and everywhere else at the Collector Car Podcast.